Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Back Porch Bluegrass. I'm your host, Paul Trendworth, and it's morning here. It may not be morning where you're listening, but that's fine. Hope you're going to enjoy the program today. Got a very special program lined up for you, but we're going to kick it off with some good music from Joe Mullins and the Radio Ramblers from their album Another Day from Life. And we're going to hear the theme song, or the title song, Another Day from Life, from Joe Mullins. This album was recorded in 2014. Great album, excellent music, so have a listen.
The front door of the shack, saw a blind man and his dog as they crossed a busy street, saw the police on the corner as he walked along his beat. And life goes on, it's just another day, a day of happiness for some a day of strife. All in all, it's another day from life. Car. Saw the firemen on the scene as they fought the raging fire. Saw a long-haired bearded boy give a pretty girl a glance. Heard a man on bended knee begging for another chance. And life goes on, it's just another day, a day of happiness for some a day of strife. All in all, it's another day from life. On the Channel 7 News. And life goes on, it's just another day, a day of happiness for some a day of strife. All in all, it's another day from life.
That was Joe Mullins and the Radio Ramblers, Another Day from Life. God, they're a good band. I have in the studio with me a good friend, luthier, repairman, general, all-round fix-it-up person, Keith McMillan. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning, Paul.
I've got Keith in here to the studio to participate in the program, and we're going to discuss setting up your instrument so you can play better. I need a serious setup in all my instruments at present. And Keith has a shop in Hamilton from where he does this sort of work. So we'll talk to him a little bit later on, but it's going to be great having him here, and you're going to find out today how to set up or what to do to set up your guitar and your mandolins. Meanwhile, we're going to listen to some fine old bluegrass from Curly Seckler in 1971. Curly Seckler, who most people will remember as an integral part of the Flat and Scruggs band in the early and mid-1950s. He was a fine singer in his own right, and he recorded an album in 1971 on the county label, and he had the Shenandoah Cut-Ups back him. Curly played guitar and sang lead. Billy Edwards played banjo, John Palmer on bass, Tater Tate on fiddle, and Herschel Sizemore on mandolin. And they did some lovely bluegrass. I've been reading up on Earl Scruggs in the last few weeks and following some of that early Flat and Scruggs music, and Curly Seckler came to mind, so I'm delighted to have the opportunity to play a track for you. Here's Moonlight on My Cabin, Curly Seckler and the Shenandoah Cut-Ups.
Moonlight
When it's moonlight on my cabin, I'll be waiting. When it's moonlight on the pine trees, I'll be there. When it's moonlight on my cabin, I'll be coming. When it's moonlight on the pine trees, I'll be there. Blue Ridge Mountain home I am, heading up the hillside never more to roam. When it's moonlight on my cabin, I'll be coming. When it's moonlight on the pine trees, I'll be there. By the lone trail of the lonesome pine is waiting, and the whippoorwills they sing their lonesome song. When it's moonlight on my cabin, I'll be coming. When it's moonlight on the pine trees, I'll be
Some classic bluegrass there from Curly Seckler. You like that, Keith?
That's lovely.
Very, very, very relaxed. He was. They liked having Curly in the band. He also did a lot of the MC work in Flatten Scruggs. Lester was a wonderful MC and sort of always spoke beautifully, but Curly did his own little segment of the show when they did a show, and he was very popular. Mm-hmm. So he's a great singer. We're going to hear another band now that I really enjoy, a band called Sawmill Road. And I heard about this band through Mark Miracle, a mandolin player who's visited New Zealand several times as part of X-Train and as part of the Sonoran Dogs. And this band, based in Arizona, really, and Southern California, Steve Spurgeon on bass, Bruce Johnson on fiddle, Charles Edsel on guitar, and Dick Brown on banjo, together with Mark on mandolin and tenor vocals. They do some wonderful music. I saw a reunion. The band had sort of finished playing, and in 2017 they did a reunion set at Grass Valley Festival, and it was very popular. There's a big crowd there, and the guys just really played superbly. They play some lovely music, and the song I've selected is one called Lovebird. I think we're all ready to go. Here it comes.
With this ring how they wed, it's a promise true. He looked into her eyes and said, honey, I love you. No room for doubt and a heart complete. She swore she'd love no other, and he said, you're all I need. In each other's arms through the whole night long, they would listen out the window to the mountain lovebird song. But love's sweet and warm and grow dark and cold if a man feels chained by a little band of gold. And there's a lovebird singing sounds like her heart break, for her true love's flown down to some other bower, and he took her love song away. Heart, oh heart, where did she go wrong? She gave it all she had, and he left her all alone. Will she break into? Will she
Hello, you are listening to Back Porch Bluegrass with Paul Trenwith. My name is Annette, and I am recording this at the southernmost tip of Lake Michigan in Gary, Indiana, USA.
Well, I have in the studio with me Keith McMillan, as I said before. Welcome to Back Porch Bluegrass, Keith.
Thank you, Paul.
You've been repairing instruments for a long time. Tell us a little bit of your background on that. When did you start doing that? Did you train as a luthier? And give us some background.
Well, I've been doing it professionally for just over 30 years now. Previous to that, I worked in the museum in Hamilton, which was a good background for all kinds of interesting things.
And yes,
but as a kid, I built instruments, and while I was at the museum, in fact, I built myself a mandolin and enjoyed that so much I started doing a bit of repair work on the kitchen table at night.
Did you build that mandolin before you started in
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That was built on the kitchen table, literally. And gradually became sort of frustrated with working at the museum, and just decided to set up my own workshop, initially building as well as repairing instruments. And in the meantime, the building has gone by the by, because I was just too busy and it was kind of doing my head in, and something had to go, so the building of instruments went. So for 30 odd years I've been doing all kinds of work, but probably about half of that work would be, certainly in terms of the numbers of instruments, would be setups, is what we call it. And that's like taking an instrument and adjusting everything to make it as playable as possible.
That you've really opened my eyes to that sort of thing, and now every time I pick up an instrument, I sort of think, oh, I need to take it to Keith McMillan to get it set up and adjusted, because the difference between playing an instrument that's hard work and playing an instrument that invites you to play nicely is just wonderful.
It's an enormous difference, and I love the little smile that I get from people when they pick up their mandolin or guitar or their banjo and they think, yes, this is what it's supposed to be like.
Yes. Do most instruments have serious problems, or are they all relatively minor?
They're usually minor. Every now and then you run into a serious issue that's not the end of the world often. It's just a matter of making a bit of a compromise with something else to make it playable.
What's the sort of things that we look at first?
Okay, well, you look at any instrument, and I have in my hot hands a mandolin, and the things which are adjustable and which matter are the neck shape, which is controllable with a truss rod. In most,
you mean the
mandolins,
neck shape as parallel to the string?
Yes, the amount of curve that there is in the neck, and the perfect neck should be nearly straight, but a small concave curve relative to the strings. Okay, so that's one. The height of the nut, which is the thing with six or eight grooves in it down by the tuning machines. It's usually white and made of plastic or bone.
Yeah.
The height of those grooves is critical. Then the actual height of the strings above the fingerboard, which is determined by the height of the bridge, or the height on a guitar, the height of the saddle, which is the white bone thing that is sitting inside the bridge. And then finally, the actual position of that bridge will determine how accurately the instrument plays in tune with itself. On acoustic guitars, there's not much you can do. On electric guitars, you can move everything. On mandolins, the whole bridge moves, so you can make it play in tune by just putting the bridge in the right place.
Same as on banjos. Yeah.
Exactly. And so those are the things we've got to play with, and it's important to do them in the right order. So the first thing I do is just pick up the instrument and have a little feel of it, have a little play on it, and see if, you know, sometimes I'm delighted to say to people, it's perfect.
Yes.
Go away, don't pay me any money.
Yeah, and work harder at your playing.
Yeah, but, you know, I'd have to say that doesn't happen very often. Yeah. So we need to get all of those things right.
Okay, so I've just handed you my 1982 Gilchrist mandolin, which you're now holding in your hand, and most bluegrassers would drool at the mouth and have their teeth removed so they could have one of those.
Literally kill for it, I think.
Yes.
Yep, so that's what I've got here. So the first adjustment we always need to make is the shape of the neck, or the adjustment of the truss rod. If you've got a truss rod, that is. Some older mandolins, like old Gibsons, don't have one.
Yes.
But on the plus side, they don't usually need much adjustment because they're fairly robust necks.
Yes.
So either using a straight edge or using the strings as a straight edge, and at this point it's important to have a fresh set of strings on the instrument of the tension that is going to be ultimately used.
Right.
And then I adjust the truss rod until the neck is nearly perfectly straight. In the case of mandolins, the neck is so short that actually, you know, to the untrained eye it would look straight, but there is a tiny little bit of relief there.
Whereabouts is the relief seen? About the fifth fret, or about a seventh, or about the octave, or
it pretty much over the whole length of the neck, but from about the octave fret upwards is normally straight, and then from the octave fret up to the nut is a gentle slight curve. You know, centered around the fifth fret. So we adjust that if we can until we've got it right. Okay. Yes. Next step is the height of the strings at the nut. Now I have sets of files of all different widths with lovely rounded edges that mimic the shape of the string, and you can use feeler gauges above the first fret, but I do it by holding the string down at the third fret.
Yeah.
And at that point you can see by how much the string clears the first fret.
Yes. And what are you aiming for?
I'm aiming for it to just miss the first fret. Which thus puts the nut more or less in line with the frets, but a touch higher. Certainly not a touch lower, because if it was low, the string would cling against the first fret. So one by one, I go through the strings with my little nut files and lower it until, when I do that little test, holding the string at the third fret, it just misses the first fret.
Okay.
And then when I'm happy with that, we go on to the overall string height.
Do you take all the strings off to do this operation, or you leave the strings on while you're doing that?
No, I leave the strings on. I used to loosen the strings, lift them out of the nut, do a little filing, put them in, tune them up, but of course you break a lot of strings that way. So now I just lift them aside with a pick. I've got a purple pick. I've used the same one for years and years. And I just ease the string up and across and out of the way of the groove in the nut while I do each one, and they never break. And you can put a little bit of pencil lead in the groove when you've finished, which assists the string to slide evenly through the nut and stay in tune and tune smoothly.
Because that groove in the nut has to sort of have its high point on the fretboard side, I guess.
That's exactly right. It's got to have a clean front edge on the side facing the body of the instrument, so that the string vibrates to that point and not beyond.
So you've got the left hand end so far sorted.
So we've got the neck shape adjusted perfectly, we've got the nut adjusted perfectly. Okay, so now we're looking at the string height. In the case of this mandolin, we have a little wheel on each side of the bridge.
Oh, that's what those little doofers are.
Yes, yeah. With which we can adjust the bridge up and down. In the case of a steel string guitar, you've got a bone or a plastic saddle, which the only way to adjust that is to take it out and file it down. Usually there's a pickup underneath it in the case of a steel string guitar, and so you've got to be fairly careful filing it down to maintain the integrity of the pickup, so the bottom of that bone saddle must be absolutely flat. And and at this point I do most of my thinking with a ruler. I measure the height of the string above the 12th fret, both the bass side and the treble side, and I have figures in my head for, you know, what we'd call a low action, which suits most people. You have to bear in mind that everyone has a different requirement. So if someone plays their guitar heavily and loudly and that's their style, well, they have to have a slightly more curved neck.
Yes.
And they have to have a slightly higher bridge to allow rattle-free playing. I like a reasonably low action on my mandolin. By being cunning, I can be both loud and slick.
Yes. Good.
So then I make those final adjustments and then check that it's playing in tune finally.
Yes.
By comparing the open note with the 12th fret note, which should be exactly one octave higher, and you can easily hear that, and move the bridge if necessary in the case of a mandolin.
These new little clip-on tuners have made it wonderful for accurate tuning too, and you can
fantastic.
Fantastic.
In the case of a steel string guitar, say, you obviously can't go moving the bridge, but what you can do is move the point of the bridge that each string bears upon.
Right.
And you can, before you do the final lowering into the correct action, you can sort of do that little intonation check and think to yourself, okay, that bridge point needs to be moved a little closer to the fingerboard or it needs to be moved a little bit back.
Yeah.
In which case, I'd take the material that I'm removing from the bridge from the top, which will allow me to control exactly where that each string bridges.
Right. Okay, now, that's assuming there's nothing wrong with the instrument itself, but what about worn frets and things like that?
They're always a little bit worn unless it's a brand new instrument. Usually what that means is you can't quite get as low an action as you otherwise would. And sometimes you have to compromise by allowing a little more curve in the neck, because the wear is always going to be at the at the nut end of the neck, and just a hint more curve will often allow sort of semi-worn frets to play cleanly.
Is that 1982 mandolin with a fair amount of use got original frets, or have you replaced them?
No, it's on its third set of frets.
Oh, wow. Okay, because they all got little string grooves in them and things like that, and you don't get such a clear, accurate note.
Mandolins actually get a lot of fret wear. Because A, they're quite small frets, B, they're quite heavy strings, and C, you have to play them hard.
Yes, you do.
You have to hold the strings down very hard with your left hand and play quite hard with your right hand in order to get a clear sound out of them.
What about things like the tuning pegs? They last forever? Or?
Pretty much they do. The best thing you can do for tuners is a little bit of lubricant.
Of course.
You know, I don't know how many times I've had people bring in instruments and they're convinced that the tuners are worn out and they want a new set. And I said, have you tried some oil? And a little bit of Vaseline or, you know, petroleum jelly wiped into the gears. Or actually, I often just use CRC or WD-40 very, very sparingly. And they're as good as new.
Yeah, right. And you also do work like replacing the bindings around the edges and repairing cracks and that you get from whacking the cap with the mandolin and things like that.
All of that kind of stuff. I've got two or three major repair jobs running at my workshop at the moment. One is a near new Martin D28 that suffered an impact and a couple of cracks along the front and a big ding in the finish. So I'm
well, I think that's good. Hit a chord on your mandolin.
So this is my.
Ooh, that's a good loud chord.
That's by 1982 Gilchrist.
Sounds great. Well, I think we probably ought to play something. I have a guitar in here that...
Gosh, that's a coincidence.
Yes, yes. that you're probably going to have to look at it and tell me that I need to bring it in and have some open heart surgery on it.
it needs a neck reset, Paul. Yeah. I've been telling you that for years.
So do I. Okay, we've got the instruments out. What should we play, Keith?
Let's play a tune called Hikawai Hornpipe. Paul and I are in two different bands together, and we use this tune in both of them. It's a tune written by me.
I'm not sure that I've ever played guitar on it before. I usually play banjo. In the Hamelin County, I play banjo on it, rather panically, and Real Men, I play bass on it. Here's a first play some guitar. Hikawai Hornpipe live in the studio. Keith McMillan on mandolin and myself on playing some rhythm guitar. Thanks, Keith. That's really great.
That was very good. You must know the chords.
I found them. I asked Keith what he'd like to hear played on the show, and he mentioned an Alison Krauss song.
Yeah, I lost this. I think it's a set of three CDs, a Rounder Bluegrass collection. Back in the late 80s I must have found it, and me and another guy had started a bluegrass band in Hamilton called the Mystery Creek Bluegrass Company, and we were looking for material, and I found this track of a very early Alison Krauss. She must have been a teenager, and what a fantastic song. And
So I dug it out of the archives, and Alison's doing fiddle and vocals. Tony Trischka is playing banjo on it. Sam Bush is playing mandolin. Roy Husky's playing bass. Lonnie Meeker is playing guitar. And Dave Denman is doing the harmony vocals. So it's way before the days of Alison Krauss in Union Station.
Yes.
So this is just the young teenage girl, the fiddle player, who got to sing lead in the song.
yeah, and look where she finished up.
Yeah. Okay, let's hear some Alison Krauss.
Thank you. doesn't seem much point in us carrying on. We pretend to try, but the feelings are gone. I hear the dove that has lost his mate. The silence that follows him tells me of our fate. And it's too late to cry, 'cause we left it all behind. Too late to cry, 'cause there's nothing left to find. You won't get more than you live on for. And it's too late to cry tonight. The empty glass before behind. Too late to cry, 'cause there's nothing left to find. You won't get more than you're living for. And it's too late to cry tonight. And it's too late to cry tonight. Too late to cry tonight.
Oh, Alison Krauss and Too Late to Cry. You're listening to Back Porch Bluegrass. I'm your host, Paul Trenwith, and I have Keith McMillan in the studio with me, and we're talking about setting up your instruments. And we've just been talking about mandolin, and I have here a guitar, Keith. It's a 1965 D21.
A mighty fine guitar it is, too.
Yes, had a fairly ordinary life. Oh, it's travelled a bit, and it's been around Australia and been around New Zealand. It's got big waterways in the front. I joke, so I say some people have a cutaway. I've got a waterway.
Why, I do believe this has had a new fingerboard at some point, Paul.
Several years ago, I took it to Keith for some attention, and he looked at the fingerboard and he said, "That's a road that's got far too many potholes in it, and we need to do some major work on that." So he gave me back the fingerboard that was on it and put a new rosewood fingerboard on, I think, because that's not a mahogany, is it?
No, rosewood.
It's a rosewood on the D21, and I have the other one at home, the other fingerboard at home in my studio, and I think I actually wore it as a tie once to a, to a gathering, you know.
Which reminds me that Paul actually had the very excellent idea when we were contemplating doing this job, that if only the fingerboard was about a millimetre wider, the whole guitar would be a lot nicer to play. And so we did that. We cribbed an extra millimetre of width out of the fingerboard by not quite rounding it off as abruptly as the old one.
Yeah. It made a big difference for me.
It did make a big difference. And in fact, Martin make a lot of guitars now that have a neck just a 1/16th of an inch.
Yeah. Wider. Yeah, my fingers are just, they're not particularly big, but they just seem to struggle to get nice notes out of the guitar when the strings were in the usual proximity.
So this guitar is a good case in point, really. Everything about it is adjusted perfectly. The shape of the neck is ideal, even though this Martin is before they started putting adjustable truss rods in Martin guitars, but it's perfect. The nut is perfect. The one thing that's not perfect is the strings are a little higher than you'd want, perhaps, for, you know, medium to gentle playing. But on the other hand, if you really wanted to play this thing loud, the strings are at the perfect height.
It does respond. My son Sam borrows a guitar every now and then, and he hits fairly hard, and he quite likes the higher action, despite the fact that he's used to a lower action. He quite likes the fact that he can hit it loud and still get a good chord.
Which brings to mind, I mentioned before, you know, I have these kind of numbers in my head that are a guide to the string height. It would probably be quite useful if I said what they were. Yes. So in the case of a mandolin, under the E string at the 12th fret, I can get away with a 16th of an inch or, you know, 1.6 millimetres. I think in inches on guitars and mandolins, and I think in millimetres on violins. and a little higher than that, perhaps 3/32 of an inch or you know, 1.82 millimetres under the G string, and that's probably lower than most mandolins that you'd walk into a store and find. But almost anyone can get away with an action that low unless they play really, really, really heavily.
Mm. Which isn't really most of the people that we know.
No, you don't really need to play instruments all that heavily unless you're in an unamplified situation. And let's face it, microphones and PA systems are everywhere, and we're generally either plugged in or we're near a microphone and you can back off. In fact, I'm constantly trying to back my own playing off. I've got into the habit of overplaying.
Me too.
I find it hard to be reasonable.
Yes, it is very hard. It is very hard to sort of back off your playing and play slightly more gently.
And in the case of a steel string guitar, you know, for a medium sort of a player or a finger style player, once all the other adjustments are correct, once again, I'd like to see about a 16th of an inch between the top of the 12th fret and the bottom of the high E string, and perhaps 3/32 of an inch or just a touch under, under the bass string. And and if that's a bit rattly, we can make it a little higher, but most people can get away with that and still play perfectly cleanly.
How much of a difference does the thickness of the string, you know, whether they're light or medium or heavy strings, make
it does
to
make,
the feel?
Makes a little difference. Interestingly, lighter strings vibrate more, and you can't get away with quite as low an action if you're playing loudly. But of course, often lighter strings implies that you're a more gentle player. It doesn't make very much difference, but it's something else to take into account.
With that guitar, it's got a very battered and aged looking front where it's got worn patches each end of the finger of the scratch board, you know,
pick guard.
The pick guard, and it's got a beautiful grain in it around the sides, that's very nice and looks good, but it certainly looks like a 50-year-old guitar.
The wood that they used for these guitars was Brazilian rosewood, which had a very, very distinctive figure to it, wasn't it, Paul?
Yeah, lovely.
Paul
lovely.
Went into the Martin factory and they remembered these guitars.
Yes, they said, "Oh, you've got one of those." You know, that was quite cool. Now, when you're moving it around in the light, I can see that the top is sort of got a bulge in it between the saddle and the bottom end of the guitar, where the strings have pulled and pulled and pulled for 50 years.
Yep.
Is that bad or good?
I guess in a perfect world, you wouldn't want much of that. It's called belly. But this is...
Oh, yeah. I got one of those too.
This is pretty reasonable. And you know, in fact, all guitars have a certain amount of pull at that point, because if they didn't, they would have been built too strongly and consequently wouldn't actually sound as good as they should. A little bit of belly is perfectly good if it's too much, and if you know, we were to put a straight edge across the guitar behind the bridge, you know, anything in the region of 2 to 3 millimeters of belly would be perfectly normal. If you had 5 millimeters, you might be getting concerned.
Right. Okay. And as long as it's holding all around the sides and everything, it's okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so if I bought my guitar into you, you'd look at it and say...
Well, at some point in the life of a guitar, they will need, and we're talking, you know, 50 or 60 or 75 years old, they might need a neck reset, which involves removing the neck from the body and changing the angle back to where it started from all those years before, and then gluing it back together. And it's an expensive job. And, you know, this guitar, it sort of needs it.
Yes.
To get a nice low action again.
Yes.
But it is an expensive job.
Well, the kid that gets that guitar, he can pay for that.
Yeah.
In terms of feel, would you hit a chord on that, and does it feel like it's about right to you, or
it's perfect for a bluegrass guitar, shall we say?
Yeah.
If you were using this for folk music and you were playing, you know, if you were playing that sort of stuff, you'd probably find it had a little bit too tough of an action.
Mm-hmm.
And one option would be simply to put slightly lighter strings on it.
Yes.
These are what's called light gauge, or 12 to 54 thousandths of an inch.
Yeah.
You could go one step down.
Go to
11. That would transform it.
Yes.
For that kind of playing, but that's not what you do.
From here, those strings are looking pretty old.
No, they sound good.
Yeah. So, well, that's good. Well, I heartily recommend finding someone like Keith in your area to fix up your guitar. Of course, if you're in New Zealand, you can send it to. Where's your shop?
It's in Frankton and Hamilton. Google me, you'll find it.
Yeah, and there's a constant stream of guitars, electric guitars, acoustic guitars, and things coming in and out for repair. And Keith did a job on my Gibson Mastertone banjo because the strap let go when I was standing over a hard floor, and it dropped to the floor and the headstock broke off. Well, I still can't find out where that headstock break is.
No, we had the banjo in my workshop a couple of weeks ago, and I had another look with a good strong light and an ultraviolet light.
Yeah.
And honestly, I could not find where that had broken.
No, me neither.
I think Paul swapped the banjo.
Yes. And so Keith does amazing work in Hamilton, and I think every musician in Hamilton gets a guitar set up by Keith at some point in time, or a instrument set up.
Of course, there are plenty of other people like me around the country and around Hamilton. And,
There are.
And everyone's good.
Yeah. And you have your own ideas about what works, and it's really just making the instrument as playable as you can, so you have as much enjoyment out of it as you possibly can.
The trick is to work out what the customer wants, what the player wants, because it's no good setting it up like I think. Yeah. I've got to find out what they think.
Yeah.
So that's the object of the exercise to me.
Yeah. Well, how about we play another tune? We'll just sort out a tune and get right back to you.
Are these expensive mics? Just
probably. Yeah. You're listening to Back Porch Bluegrass with myself, Paul Trenwith, and guest Keith McMillan, and we're talking mandolins and guitars. And we had a little discussion, and I asked if Keith could remember that tune Over the Waterfall. And after a little bit of tooing around on his mandolin,
we found it.
We found it, something about a waterfall there. I'm playing my Martin guitar with a thumb pick on, which I do these days because I'm getting clumsier as I get older, and I find that I can get a perfectly adequate rhythm using a thumb pick and a finger flick, a bit like a Carter family lick. My flat picking is getting pretty dodgy.
For all you mandolin nuts out there, and I know there are some of
yes.
you, I'm using a blue chip pick. Google them if you're interested. They're tremendously hard, but fantastic tone. Not cheap, but they're worth it. I'm using slightly heavier than normal strings. These are 11 is the gauge of the thinnest string, and they're elixir strings, which I personally really like on mandolin.
Right.
It's set up reasonably low.
Let's have a go at Over the Waterfall. Thank you. That's Over the Waterfall, live from Free FM 89.0 in Hamilton, New Zealand, as part of the Back Porch Bluegrass Show. Keith, it's been really good having you on the show. I'm absolutely delighted to have being able to share you with all the people who are listening into Back Porch Bluegrass. So I know there's plenty of them out there who are playing guitars and mandolins. We might have a workshop on banjo one day, but that might have to be R21 or something like that. Banjos are pretty serious stuff.
Yeah, and you know, just remember there are plenty of people like me out there in the world, and you know, they're easy to find once you start looking. The important thing is to have a good talk with them before anything else happens, to make sure you're on the same page.
Yeah, good comment. Very good. We've got another track here that we can play for you. You asked about a track called Home Sweet Home Revisited, and I hunted through the archives and came up with J.D. Crow and the New South. That's the one that you expected?
I think it is. We're yes. talking, you know, a few years ago now.
This was recorded January 1975. And J.D. Crow's banjo and baritone, Tony Rice on guitar and lead vocals, Ricky Skaggs on mandolin, fiddle and tenor, Bobby Sloan on bass and Jerry Douglas on dobro. I'm pretty sure that's a version that you wanted to hear.
Yep, I'm pretty sure it's going to be good.
Let's have a listen to J.D. Crow in the New South, Home Sweet Home Revisited.
The old hometown is sure in trouble. It looks like it must have doubled in sin and size since I've been gone. Papers all full of killing. 2 million people willing to die for something they've never known. The city streets of drunks and junk and stone. A heaven made of hell they call their home. Now it's gone like the life of a child when it turns its back on your mind. Tomorrow has no home, sweet home. Look what they've done to mine. It just faded into time. That I've kept the way it always was. And ever since he died, it just won't run. I always knew I was his favorite one. Now it's gone like the life of a child when it turns its back on your mind. Tomorrow has no home, sweet home. Look what they've done to mine. It just faded into time. We used to live in, the roof is falling in like every other one along the block. It took 20 years to pay and 10 to run. Dad says it's all just better off for God. Now it's gone like the life of a child when it turns its back on your mind. Tomorrow has no home, sweet home. Look what they've done to mine. It just faded into time.
Great song.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, they do well, don't they? Keith writes the occasional mandolin tune, and he actually wrote a song which we recorded as part of the Hamilton County album in 2016. We put out an album called These Old Hands, and on it was a song called U-Turn that we decided to do.
Yeah, I wrote the song after constantly believing the GPS on my motorbike and, and getting horribly lost. and I kind of wrote a song about how you don't want to believe everything you hear.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and you're making a U-turn. And it's, yes, I like that concept of having a physical situation but then turning it around so it becomes a modus operandi, really.
Yes.
And anyway, we did this, Alan Rhodes singing lead, and I don't think, did you get to sing baritone?
I think I've got a part in there somewhere.
So this is Hamilton County Bluegrass Band from the album These Old Hands, a song called U-Turn.
Set off for Wanganui, my nav man on. Be there at 2:30, cruising along. The side road looks tempting, down it I go. Just a minute later, a voice that I hate. U-turn, when possible. U-turn, not possible. U-turn, could be rough, might be windy, but I'll go ahead anyway. Change and I'm tempted, it could be wrong. I do it, looks better going blissfully. A voice in my ear from somebody near. U-turn, when possible. U-turn, not possible. U-turn, could be rough, might be windy, but I'll go ahead anyway. We all need someone with good advice. Easier and smoother to get somewhere nice. But I'll just ignore it, I don't know why. Don't mind where I'm going, just enjoy the ride. Possible. U-turn, could be rough, might be windy, but I'll go ahead anyway.
Well, how about that? Pretty good mandolin break in there.
Not bad.
I bet you couldn't do it now. you'd have to study up on it.
Yes, I would.
Yeah, it's still those GPSs, they tell you off when you go past the turnoff and, you know, tell you when to turn around. Oh, they've got no idea of...
They're terrible things. You can't trust them.
But they're good fun. Good fun. You're listening to Back Porch Bluegrass. Big hello to all the people listening on Access Radio stations throughout New Zealand and throughout Canada and on Bluegrass Planet Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. And all those people who are picking it up on a podcast, I hope you've enjoyed today's show. It's been a bit different having a luthier in here talking about the instruments, but they're pretty important to us bluegrassers. We're sponsored by Shearer's Music Works in Hamilton. They sell lots of musical instruments and they've been promoting music in Hamilton for more than 50 years. Go and see them and you can get your instrument from them and take it around to Keith. He'll make sure it's set up properly and they work together pretty well here. So time to say goodbye. I think we'll take it out with a tune from the Dreadful Snakes.